Hi, I'm Tracy.
I'm April.
And this is Killer Spirits. Welcome. Episode 35.
Episode 35 is among us.
It's among us today. Here we are.
Yeah. So today is part one of the farmhouse massacre.
Yeah. And it's April Day.
It's April Day.
Yeah. You're like ready to dive in. I haven't even talked about my drink yet.
Talk about it.
You're How diving. Was your week? This week was busy, but weekend was good. Took a little, you know, short little one night road trip. With the hubby. That was fun. We drank a lot of beer. Went to a really great brewery called Revision, which I love. Mm. They have a beer, if you're a beer person. It's called Sparkle Muffin.
That's the most adorable name for a beer ever.
Yeah, it is so adorable. It's a really good IPA. And not only is the name adorable, but there's a kitty cat on the can. Oh,
is there a muffin on the can?
There probably is. I don't remember that part. Mm. But then there's another one called Poor Decisions, which is P-O-U-R, and it has a unicorn on the can. Also really delicious.
I like that.
So yeah, we drank a lot of beer. It was cool. Fun. We didn't gamble at all, even though we were in the city of Gamble. But
yeah, I mean,
it's fine. We were also in the city where there's good beer.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. So yeah, that was my weekend.
Fun.
Yeah. What about yours?
We changed out the wiring on the Jeep.
Exciting stuff.
Very fun. Which was a huge pain in the ass.
I'm not a DIY person like you, so I don't do those things. I drink beer and hire other people to do those things.
Mm-hmm. If I was smart, I would.
Yeah.
What else did I do? Oh, I went to a baseball game last night.
That's right. And you stayed out too late.
We stayed out too late. There was a fireworks show.
Oh, I saw something about that online or something.
It was fun.
Very cool.
It was a good fireworks show, too. It wasn't just like a bunch of random shit thrown together.
Yeah, where they just like,
it was like an actual
some things in the sky, like pew, pew.
Like pattern show.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Very cool.
And the only beer I had was Coors Light at the stadium for $10.50.
Oh, jeez. That's a lot.
Like, you guys are really raking me over the coals with this beer, buddy.
Of course. Well, we're not raking you over the coals today with our beautiful cocktail.
No, this cocktail is great.
It is really nice. And we have had some peach vodka sitting in our little
waiting
for me to use it. Today was the day.
Waiting for Georgia.
So Georgia, this is about you, baby. So this story is set in Georgia, the farmhouse massacre. And I wanted to, of course, use the peach vodka because peach is the Georgia state fruit, which was officially, I believe, made the state fruit in 1995, but has
that
been
late?
Yeah, but has been a part of, you know, Georgia for much, much longer than that. Oddly, though, you may not know this, April, but peaches are not its most lucrative crop. Would you like to know what it is?
Tobacco.
No. Wouldn't even have thought that.
Corn?
Nope.
Almond.
Not even close. Though their state nut is a pecan, which is amazing.
Oh, of course it's a pecan.
Pecans are so, 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 so good.
I don't know.
It's the blueberry.
What?
Yeah.
Georgia blueberries.
But we're going with peaches today because that's their state
fruit. I always
think
like Oregon blueberries.
There's probably blueberries there too. I mean, really a lot of states do a lot of different crops, but they're known for the peach. The Georgia peach. So today our cocktail is called the peach evasion, like you're evading something. Just want to make that clear.
It's a peach on the run.
It's a peach on the run. That's our drink today. So it's actually a really simple drink. There's only three ingredients in it. First, you're going to take some martini glasses. You're going to put a little bit of maybe caramel, maple syrup, whatever, something sticky and delicious, because you're going to crumble up some graham crackers and brown sugar. put that in a bowl. Or you can also use a biscotti like we did because we didn't have graham crackers. So, you know, use what you got, okay?
I feel like any cookie would do.
It absolutely would do. You just want something sweet and fun on the rim of your glass. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of brown sugar because this is basically a take on a peach cobbler martini. So rim your glass, do the goodness, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You cut up. We did a fresh peach. Cut it up. Did a little slice on the edge of your glass. Then this is for two drinks. Use 3 ounces of peach vodka, 2 ounces of cake vodka, which literally smells like birthday cake, and 3 ounces of Frangelico or any hazelnut liqueur. Frangelico is kind of expensive.
Is it?
It is. It's a little on the pricey side, I think. So if you want to use any hazelnut liqueur, I think it would be fine here. And then shake it all up in a glass, pour it in your glasses, and enjoy. It's
delicious.
Very delicious. It doesn't need anything else to sweeten it. We drizzled a little bit of caramel on the top, mm-hmm. but you could also do that fun thing that, you know, they like to do at, I don't know, what's that restaurant called where they have pasta and endless breadsticks?
Olive Garden?
Olive Garden, you know, where they like drizzle the, you know, caramel or whatever on the bottom of the glass and then they pour their drink on it.
I love that you picked Olive Garden as the place of. That does that.
It is.
When Starbucks is the most obvious answer.
They don't have martini glasses at
all. I didn't know they do that. Martini glasses.
Yeah. And then they also do the mudslide. Remember the mudslide drink? And it comes in the big glass and then they would drizzle the chocolate in it.
I don't even think I've been to Olive Garden since I've been 21.
I haven't been to Olive Garden probably for about 19 years.
But I do really love the concept of unlimited bread salad and breadsticks.
Yeah, unless you work there.
I would just take the salad and bread.
Freaking hate it.
Yeah, probably.
Great. Here comes some more people for unlimited breadsticks.
I mean.
And really, unlimited people, how many breadsticks can you eat? It's like this all-you-can-eat business. I can't even eat that much. Mm-mm. So it's kind of a dumb thing to say.
I mean. Yeah, there's a limit on your unlimited.
I mean.
There's a limit on your unlimited.
Exactly. So anyway, go make this drink. It's really, really good. It's very simple and it's kind of a showstopper. So make sure you go check it out on Instagram. We have a picture posted mm-hmm. and you can see how beautiful it looks. And April's partaking right now.
Along with pictures from the show.
Yes.
And our Instagram is at Killer Spirits Pod.
Thank you for reminding me.
So add us over there.
Are you ready to start this heinous? I don't know. Actually, don't know much about this.
It's incredibly heinous.
Okay, so I am excited to settle in and listen to you for a while.
I could just get myself set up
here. Oh yeah, get set up and tell us all about Georgia.
Okay, so I'm going to start with Ned and Ernestine Alday. They were married in 1935 and parented 9 lovely children.
Nine.
Wow. That's a lot. They saved what they could for years and eventually were able to purchase a property, which by 1973, when our story takes place, had turned into a working farm with animals and crops. So they pretty much started with nothing. And now they have a farm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. At that time, Ned and Ernestine lived in the big farmhouse with their 2 youngest children, Faye and Jimmy.
I love the name Faye.
I know, it's cute. It's just F A Y though.
Yeah, usually it's F A Y E.
Their son, Jerry Alday, was married to Mary Campbell Alday. She just goes by Mary Alday, but her maiden name's Campbell.
Okay.
They were married in 1970 and they lived together in a trailer. A few miles down from the farmhouse.
Maybe also a few minutes.
Yeah. Their other son, Chester, who they called Shuggy, which is adorable.
That's adorable.
Lived with his wife, Barbara. They were married in 1969 in another trailer parked just a few yards away from the big farmhouse.
Wow.
Most of the family, even after being grown and married, continued to work on the family farm.
Okay. So it was like a family business.
Yes. Even Ned's brother, Aubrey, worked on the farm with his nephews and his brother.
Wow.
The Aldays were said to be upstanding, honorable people. They worked on their farm, attended church. They minded their own business. Those are good people.
And none of their kids ever caused trouble. Nobody had ever had anything bad to say about these people.
Okay.
Donaldsonville. That's a hard one to say because there's no D. It's not Donaldsonville.
Oh, it's Donaldsonville?
Donaldsonville.
Okay.
It was a very small town. There was 3,300 people and only 9,000 people in the whole county.
Oh, so everyone knew everyone.
Everyone knew everything. And if anything went on in town, everyone talked about it.
Of course. What else are you going to do? Yeah. Especially in the 70s.
So people in Donaldsonville had a sense of security, rightfully so, as much nothing really ever happened there.
Yeah. Like it was a safe place to raise your kids.
Yes. Mm-hmm. People left their doors unlocked.
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing. What happened to this family was an absolute stroke of unluck.
Uh-oh.
They were chosen completely at random because four guys were on the run from the law and their stolen car was running out of gas.
Oh, no. You're going to kill me with this story, aren't you?
So let's back it up. So the four guys that I'm talking about are Carl Isaacs, Billy Isaacs, Wayne Coleman, and George Dungy.
All right, so brothers and then two randoms.
So actually three brothers.
Oh, okay.
Carl, Billy, and Wayne. Wayne is their half-brother.
Okay.
George is a friend. So in 1973, Carl was 19. Billy, his younger brother, was 15. Wayne, Carl's half-brother, was 26. And George, Wayne's friend, was 36. Carl had a very troubling childhood. The book, Brothers in Blood, which is the book I read for reference to the story, was written after many interviews with Carl, and the things that happened to him were dark.
Oh, so the author interviewed him.
Many times.
Interesting.
Yes. His mother, Betty, was married twice. She had five children from her first marriage to Carl Carson Coleman. We'll call them the Coleman kids.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Wayne Coleman. And seven children from her second marriage to Archie Isaacs, which is the other two boys.
Okay.
By the time Wanda, the baby, was born, Carl was number 8 out of 12 kids.
Oh, my.
Archie Isaacs, their dad, seemed to enjoy being a husband and a father, although old-fashioned and used to giving orders to the children. He still dressed up the kids and took them to church, played with them, listened to their kids' struggles. You know, like a dad does.
Yeah.
He was just kind of strict.
Okay.
Betty, however, was not terribly involved. So okay. She had 12 kids that she didn't really want to be a mom to.
Oh.
Yeah. So Archie accused his wife, Betty, of not being home enough and going out to the bar with her friends after work too often. He said it's because she didn't like her children, which she didn't deny.
Oh, sad.
She continued to do what she wanted, and eventually Archie and Betty's relationship deteriorated because of it. One night, while the family was having dinner around the table, Archie and Betty started arguing about Betty's life choices. Betty asked Archie, if he was so tired of her, why didn't he just pick up and leave? Which is not a good thing to say to somebody who's on the edge of leaving.
No.
So that night, Archie got up from the table, packed a suitcase, and left.
Oh, no.
He didn't even kiss his kids goodbye. He gave one group goodbye to all the children present and hightailed it out of there.
So the children suffered because they're idiots.
Yes.
Okay, great.
When the children started crying, Betty tried to reassure them, saying that he would be back, but he never returned.
Oh, my God. This is breaking me.
Well, don't feel too bad for these people because
they're
real shitheads.
But can I feel bad for the children?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Thanks. And all the other children involved because not all of them are bad.
Okay.
So one day, Carl came home from school and no one was there. Little guy walking home from school.
Like no one, as in like he's got 11 siblings and a mother and nobody's there?
His siblings were there.
Oh,
mother wasn't there.
Oh, no.
He was with his sister Hazel, who was 12, Robert, who is 8, and Billy, who is 6.
So who's the oldest here?
Hazel.
Who's 12?
So she's not the oldest out of all the kids. She's just the oldest one that was still living with them.
Got it.
There are older kids that are grown.
Oh, okay. I was like, oh my gosh, she has 12 kids and the oldest is 12? Like, how does that even work? Okay, I see.
And Carl was only 10 years old.
Okay, they're all babies.
Little.
All babies.
Betty never came home. They had to go to the landlord's house up the street and use the phone to call their older sister, Ruth Coleman. She had already gotten married and moved out of the house by then. But Ruth came to get all the kids and take them home with her. She already had the youngest, Wanda, and George, the toddler. Ruth was married to Russell, and they were just starting out in life, young and just married. Ruth was 22, now responsible for 6 children under the age of 12.
So mom just up and left her baby and toddler and everything?
Everything.
Wow, I can't. I just can't. Yeah.
And Ruth and Russell were not really financially able to take care of their children or the children.
Right.
They were barely taking care of themselves.
At 22, I could barely take care of myself. There was no way.
They were skating by as it was.
Wow.
So the kids transferred schools closer to Ruth's house. And at the new school, Carl was bullied for being poor. Wearing threadbare clothes, shoes with holes. Carl was getting in fights at school and having a hard time controlling his anger, which is evident in the rest of the story.
And understandable as a child.
Yes. Eventually, one of the teachers contacted the Maryland State Welfare Authorities
to
have the kids evaluated by social workers. When the social workers found out both of the kids' parents had abandoned them and that they were living with their sister, they were taken into the system and assigned foster homes that day.
That might not be better either.
They split the kids up. Well, actually, for Carl, it's not. They split the kids up, and Carl went with the Denmark family, his first foster family.
That's the problem, because they split siblings up. And
I know.
Yeah. Sometimes unavoidable, but let's do better.
And how do you explain that to a kid?
You can't.
It's like everything you know is gone.
Exactly.
Good luck.
Like, just stay with sister at that point. Just give her some freaking services. But, of course, this is 73, so.
Right.
Or is this 73? This is in the 60s, right?
Yeah, this is before 73.
Oh, because, okay.
He was 10, so it was 9 years before 73, so the 60s.
Oh, okay, yeah.
66.
They didn't do services back then.
Not the way we do them now.
No.
Yeah. I will say, though, that throughout the story, he seems to have, although the system didn't really make the best choices for him, they did follow up. He wasn't really forgotten about.
That's good.
And they made recommendations on his behalf, although they weren't good.
Oh.
So they weren't inactive. Right? So Carl's first foster family, the Denmark family, in their house, he was more of an employee than he was a son.
Oh.
He helped his foster dad, Edward, with his side business, which was landscaping. So when he got home from school, he changed into his work clothes and loaded the truck for whatever job they were going to do. Fill the gas tanks.
So he was not a kid at all, basically.
No.
Annoying.
He was a service employee.
Jesus.
So this job that Carl had to do, their son, Jackie, who was 2 years younger than Carl, never had to do.
Of course. He got to be a kid.
Right. He got to eat chocolate cake after school, and Carl had to go put on his work clothes and get to work. So Jackie was 2 years younger than Carl, and he could basically do no wrong. Mm-hmm. Everything that Carl said was suspect. Jackie was golden child.
Right, of course.
Also, Carl slept in the basement.
Oh, geez.
While they had an extra guest bedroom that he said a guest never slept in the entire 3 years he lived there.
Fuck off.
They made him sleep in the basement.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Which is better than, I guess, nothing, but not great.
Maybe not better than being with his sister.
Yeah. So while working with Edward, Carl learned that he was a klepto. Which is funny.
Your face when you
because
said that.
He describes Edward as like the super clean cut. Like, that's why he liked doing the landscaping. Okay. He didn't need the money. He liked manicuring to the minute detail. He did it for, like, fun.
Edward?
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't, like, to support his family?
No. He had a good job.
Oh, this is plenty of money. That's right. You did say this side was job. A side business.
So Carl learned that he was actually stealing stuff.
Edward was?
Yes. So Edward would swipe things from each house's garage. He would tell the people, leave your garage unlocked for me so I can put the machines away in there, have access to it if, I don't know, he had some excuse to leave the garage open. So something, he would always steal something that wouldn't be missed. Like if they had three bags of charcoal briquettes, he'd take one. Okay. Or he would take a paintbrush. Not stuff that he needed.
No, not
like, stuff that he couldn't buy.
Right.
He said he even would take, like, out of a storage box, he'd take a couple of Christmas ornaments.
Not because he was, like, his family was starving or something. No. It's just because it was for the fun of it.
It was just his
little thing. Rush.
Yeah. So in this however many years he helped his foster dad, Carl learned that everyone steals stuff. It's just a normal thing we do. We go to people's houses and we steal stuff.
Carl, it's not normal.
Yeah. This revelation did not serve Carl well, as he spent the rest of his life, or the rest of his free life anyway, taking things that didn't belong to him.
Oh, no. Well, that's what he's been shown.
Right. And, I mean, Edward got away with it.
Obviously.
I mean, who would notice, you know? One bag of charcoal briquettes or a paintbrush out of 50 paintbrushes that you have?
Yeah, you would just be like, oh, weird, I thought about three of those.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've done that before.
No one would think, like, oh, it's probably the guy who mows the lawn.
Yeah, the guy who mows the lawn is stealing our briquettes.
Yeah, probably not. So Carl eventually ran away from the Denmarks after he was beaten pretty brutally by his foster mother, Jennifer.
Okay.
So the fight started after Carl hit Jackie, their son, in the mouth in the front yard. So Jackie was planning to tell on Carl for getting himself kicked out of the Boy Scouts, and also told him he was no good, which definitely hit a soft spot with Carl.
Of course.
They were both in the Boy Scouts together, which Carl was really happy about. He really liked being in the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
They bought him a really nice uniform. It was like the only time that foster...
It was normal.
Yeah. It was the only time that foster family treated him like they treated Jackie.
Equal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was a really big deal that he got in trouble and was getting kicked out.
What did he do?
So I guess the way they set up the tents, they're called like pole tents.
Okay.
And there's like one pole in the middle, and then all the corners get
tied down or something
into the ground.
Okay.
So I guess it was part of their like mischief thing, like him and his friends, that they would wait until somebody put their pole tent up and everybody was in it, and then they'd go like cut one of the sides.
Oh, that's not good.
So that it would like topple over on them.
He was not being a good Boy Scout.
No, he was not being a good Boy
at
Scout.
At all.
Okay. Carl and Jackie are walking home from the Boy Scouts. Carl's getting kicked out. He's like, don't tell your fucking parents. Because Jennifer is not a nice lady.
Oh.
And they're going to be really mad at me. So I'm just hoping I can ride it out and they'll let me back in and forgive me for what I did.
Right.
And Jackie's like, you're a piece of shit. Your family's a piece of shit. You got kicked out of the Boy Scouts. You suck. I'm telling my parents.
This is their exact conversation.
I mean, basically.
I'm just kidding.
For like children, you know.
I know.
So they get to the front yard and Carl just
unleashes his fury.
Yeah, yeah. Really sucker punches him right in the face.
Wow.
So
Jack, he's like, go eat your fucking cake, man.
Right. And then all that stuff over years built up. It's like, not
of course.
Good. So once Jackie started screaming.
Oh.
Of course. Jennifer met Carl in the front yard and close fists punched him in the face.
Okay, and how old is he now? Like 11?
13?
13? Okay, close fist punching?
An adult.
Fisting punch, whatever you call it, in the face of a child.
Yes.
No.
No.
I don't really care what the infraction is. I mean, there's boys fighting. I get it. It's not good, but...
But a 13-year-old punching another 13. You know, 11-year-old is a lot different than a full-grown person doing it.
That's not how any adult should react to that situation.
She wasn't really worried about that.
Obviously.
And nothing bad happened to her.
Well, of course not.
After the fact. So after the first or second hit took Carl down, he curled into the fetal position as she continued to pummel and beat him.
And she's a foster parent.
Correct. And they're in the front yard.
I'm mind blown.
No words. She was always very strict with Carl and often scared him, but this was like next level. She eventually stopped, took Jackie into the house, closed the door, turned off the porch light, leaving Carl on the front lawn to bleed.
Of course she did.
Which is Terrible.
And why would she not be put in prison for that situation?
Yeah.
Failed.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you're going to tell me some horrific things and I'm going to be like, rah! But I do want to say I feel like this child has been failed again and again. Yes. Thus far.
Thus far. He will continue to be failed.
Yeah. And that makes me sad.
Edward, the foster father, eventually came outside to get Carl, but Carl picked up and ran.
Carl's like, fuck you.
And he kept running. He ran and hitchhiked all the way to his grandmother's house in Pennsylvania, which was like 35 miles away.
Which, why were they not with grandma?
Well, you'll find out that too.
Oh, crap.
So at this point, he was finally free and feeling great. Like, he knocked on his grandma's door and she was like, come in.
He's like, bum bum, here yeah, I am.
Have a snack. Let me wash your clothes.
Like, okay.
Regular grandma shit, you know?
Regular grandma shit.
So at this point, Carl had decided, I'm going to get a job.
At 13?
I'm going to set myself up on a good path.
Okay.
I'm going to move on from the past. This is going to be great. I'm so happy with my grandma. He's like smiling again.
Any 13-year-old who has to say, I'm going to move on from the past, that's a red flag to me.
He was only with his grandma for 3 days before the police and his caseworkers found out where he was.
Yeah.
And his grandma was the one who turned him in.
Okay, grandma.
She couldn't afford to support them both on her pension alone, and she thought it was best for Carl if they followed the rules.
Oh, sometimes the rules are no bueno.
She thought the state had Carl's best interest, and he was better off with them. Of course, Carl felt betrayed and completely shattered.
Yeah.
The Maryland caseworkers took him in, back to the office, and tried to place him with the Denmark family, and they refused him. So imagine a caseworker, after a child 3 days after being beaten to a bloody pulp, is bruised, black-eyed, bloody, taking them into your office and begging the family who did that to that child to take them back.
I honestly have no words.
That's insane.
I mean, especially as a person who worked in child welfare, I cannot even fathom this.
And they're on the phone with her like,
this would not happen now.
No. And they're on the phone with her like, are you sure you really don't want to take him back?
Are you sure you don't want this little child that you use as a punching bag to come back into your home that you could possibly beat again? Are you sure that we can't somehow?
Yeah. Imagine being a child being rejected by that.
I can't, actually. That is terrible.
Terrible. So once they refused him, Carl was then sent to reform school, which was called Maryland State Training School, at the recommendation of welfare. So welfare went to the court. They said, we're having a hard time placing him. He's an older kid who obviously has air quotes problems with running away. And violence at this point, I guess. So they make the recommendation to put him in this reform school. At this training school, Carl was subjected to an attempted rape his first night.
What?
Yeah. It was an all-boys school, and there was a gang of 5 boys that would violently rape other boys in the middle of the night.
Oh my gosh.
Which is a story I've heard about these kind of schools.
I have too.
Present day,
mm-hmm. even. Present day, even. You are right. Especially group homes and that sort of thing. Yeah. It's definitely still rampant.
Yeah. So if the boy fought back, they would hold his arms and legs and shove a towel in his mouth so he couldn't scream. The first night, Carl was able to get loose enough to scream for help. And the adult, which they called a house parent, came in and stopped them. So I'm guessing they were like, the house parent was like in an adjacent room. Like, supposedly chaperoning them.
Okay.
So
he was almost raped, but he was saved.
Because he started screaming.
Okay.
So he came in and stopped them. The adult house parent chalked it up to a nightmare, because otherwise it would have been, quote, a lot of paperwork.
Wow, yeah, I hate that paperwork.
Yeah. So because Carl didn't trust authority at all at this point, he didn't report anything to the administration about what happened.
No.
He just decided to handle it himself.
Of course.
So he took a bed spring from one of the mattresses, straightened it out, and sharpened it on the concrete. He was ready to fuck up whoever came for him.
I can't blame him for this.
And he did.
Oh.
The next night, they came for him about 20 minutes after lights out, and he fought like hell. He stabbed three of the boys with the bedspring.
Okay.
He was trying to get one of them in the eye.
Not mad at this yet.
Yeah. He was trying to get one of them in the eye, but he missed.
Where'd he get him?
Just
face or something?
Yeah.
Chest.
The commotion caused the adult house parent.
Let me guess. He's going to get in trouble for this. Oh my God. I'm going to be so mad.
No, he doesn't.
Okay.
to come in and check on them, which sent all the boys skittering back to their bunks and back to sleep.
Skittering. That's a great word.
So because Carl fought back, the boys left him alone.
Okay. Good.
So, okay.
But please, okay, go ahead. I'm not.
And actually, one of the boys had a sit down. I didn't put this in here. But one of the boys had a sit down with him the next day, like the morning after. And he's like, look, we're going to leave you alone. But the rest of the boys in my group want to kill you.
Oh.
So one of the options to not getting raped is giving up your commissary or money that people send you, like prison. And Carl's basically like, nobody's going to send me shit, dude. Like, I'm not getting fucking anything.
Guess what? Nobody cares that I'm here and I'm not getting any money.
Right. And you're not going to get to rape me every night.
Yeah. Like, so
it's not going to happen. And the kid is like, well, maybe your mom will have a change of heart. You know, sometimes when people go into institutions, that's when their parents realize. And he's like, no, dude, you don't understand. My mom doesn't give a fuck about me.
And she's been gone for years at this point. It's
never going to happen.
Like 3 years?
Yeah. And nowhere to be found. Like, they're not looking for her. They're not trying to place the kids back with her. Like, she's in the wind.
And in modern day, she would have lost parental rights at this point. Would have no
right to him. And she probably did.
Yeah, I don't know how it worked in the 60s.
But so the boy that sat down with him was like, well, they want to kill you. So I'm just going to tell them that you're paying me $1 a week. Because basically Carl explained, because the other kid was like, well, you know, we could get those bed springs too. Like, we could stab you. And he's like, well, yeah, but if you stab me, I'm going to stab you. Like, it's still coming for you.
Wow.
No matter what.
Hardcore.
Yeah. At 13?
Oh, yeah. 14 years old? He's definitely a survivor at this point.
Wild. So anyway,
like, wild.
The kid just resigned to being like, I'm just going to tell them that you're paying me $1 a week.
He's like, I can't even deal with this drama.
Just shut up. Just pretend that I'm paying you.
He's like, okay.
And Carl said, like, I promise you, if my mom ever sends me money, you can have all of it. Which is like, fat chance in hell. And she's never sending me anything.
Yeah. When hell freezes over, I'll make sure you get all my money.
Yeah. I'll make sure I call you first.
Wow.
So Carl was only supposed to do 6 months at the reform school, but he ended up staying for 9 months because they had a hard time placing him in a new home.
Of course they did.
Because he's an older kid. He has issues.
Yeah.
He was finally placed with a family, the Wardlaws, Frank and Edna and their six-year-old daughter, Grace. They gave him his own room, new clothes, placed him in a regular public school. Things seemed to go well for him there. He also got along really well with the little girl. They were, you know, brother and sister. They treated him as closely to a son as you could.
Okay. No side business. No. Right. Yeah.
Like, he was part of the family.
Right.
They also understood the struggles he had with the Denmarks. So his first foster family, they like, his foster mom made him call them mom and dad.
Jennifer?
Yeah. And Jennifer would get like really abusive if he didn't call her mom.
Gross.
Weird. So they understood all that stuff. And they're like, you don't have to call us mom and dad.
Because we're not Frank and Edna.
Yeah. We're not going to like push you into doing anything weird.
Yeah.
It's just a regular life. Just go to school and be a kid. So Carl got a paper route.
Okay.
He wanted to start working. Frank helped him start a savings account. So he was putting away $5 a week.
It's a very 13, 14-year-old thing to do.
Fantastic idea. But he struggled with school.
Mm. Of course, because he's had trauma. Yes,
he was behind in school, so he struggled with his lessons. And he was also very distracted by girls.
Oh, well, that's also normal.
Because
right?
You're in your puberty years, and hello? You're at an all-boys school for almost a year. You haven't even seen a girl.
Oh, geez.
And you're 14.
And then you go to, like, a public school, and you're like, bow, chicka, wow, wow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. So he met a girl. Her name was Jane.
Oh.
And he immediately, like the day after meeting her, started skipping school to spend time with her.
Oh no, Carl.
She also came from sort of a bad situation. She was on probation.
Oh no.
And they bonded over that.
Of course they did.
And they did what teens do when they're alone. They had sex.
They had sex.
Yeah. Uh-oh. They skipped school for 3 days. Just enjoying each other. For 3 full days.
That's a lot of enjoying.
Yeah. You probably could have gotten away with it for 1 or 2 days, but you had to go for the third one.
It's always that third day that's going to get you.
Yes. And they were literally walked in on.
Whoa.
In the action with the business.
Where were they doing the business?
At her house.
Oh, dear.
So her mom left for work at like 7.
Ugh.
Yeah. So that he would just come over and they would never go to school.
So they were caught in the act.
In the act by her mother. The school truancy officer.
What?
And Edna, his foster mom.
Oh, they were all out scouting around together?
I guess so. First place to look.
Okay.
So Edna took Carl back home.
I would say she would, yep.
And Frank took him down to the basement.
Oh, no. This is not going to make me happy, is it?
It's not going to make you as unhappy as I thought it would. Because as I was reading the story, I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me with this kid. Frank strapped Carl to a chair.
What?
Ankles and wrists. And shaved his head.
Why?
That's a good question. That was his punishment. For what, air quotes, he had done to that girl.
Who was a willing participant. Yes. Thank you very much.
And he was clear about that. I didn't do anything to her that she didn't ask me to do.
So now you have no hair.
Very odd punishment.
That is not like normal mother father behavior.
No. And I don't know what that triggered in Carl. Maybe like the authority thing or
maybe something. Being strapped to a fucking chair. Yeah. That sounds horrific. In a basement?
Yeah. And he even said, like, I didn't think Frank would hurt me. Like, I didn't feel like I was going to be a hit or anything was going to happen to me. And he shaved my fucking head.
That, I don't know, on some weird level, that seems worse than hitting you.
Maybe.
It just seems so.
It's like invasive.
It's so invasive.
It's like a violation.
That's the word I was trying to think of. It's so violating. And, you know, because your hair is a very personal thing. And I feel like now you've taken something from my body. You know, it just seems really odd to me. I don't know. I almost feel like it's worse than being hit.
Well, Carl definitely felt that way.
Yeah.
And it sent him through the fucking roof.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, on another level.
Yeah.
So he completely flipped out, cursed everybody out. I mean, the worst curse words you could think of.
I'd be like, you just wait till I get out of this chair.
Screamed. And he ran away again.
Yeah, well, I could see why. Yeah.
So he left out the front door at that moment and was gone.
Yeah.
He was caught within 2 hours and unfortunately sent back to the reform school.
Sure, great.
So he really thought this family was going to work out.
He's like, great. Now I got to get another bed spring ready.
Oh, God. No, he was fine.
Oh, okay.
He had a reputation.
Yeah.
They're like, never mind with this kid. Okay. So he was only supposed to do 6 months. But of course, he was there longer than that. So he meets this kid named Jock Morton, who is a year older than him. When Carl came back to the reform school, they asked him if he liked the job he had last time, because of course they make them work.
Oh, of course.
Do school.
You can't be reforming unless you, them. Like, work your ass
exactly.
off.
I guess his first detail was like the garden, like trimming bushes or whatever, raking leaves.
Hoeing.
So, yeah. Hoeing. So when he came back, his counselor asked him, did you like the gardening job or whatever? They could put you back on garden detail. And being the smart ass 14-year-old, he's like, no, you know what? I really didn't like it. And they were like, okay, well, since you didn't like the garden thing, we're going to give you garbage detail. So now you get to ride on a garbage truck and take out all the trash for 6 months.
Mm.
Which was a punishment on top of his punishment.
Of course.
So the other kid on garbage detail was Jock Morton, who was a year older than him. He was from Baltimore. So he decided after 6 months on the garbage detail, he thought, I'm only doing 6 months. It'll be over. Jock is trying to convince him, let's blow this place. Like, let's escape. Let's get out of here. And he's like, it's only 6 months. It's fine. They'll put me with another family. I can start over. I'll stay. So he makes it through the winter. The 6 months pass. They forget about him again.
No.
He's there for an extra couple weeks or whatever it was. And Jock finally convinces him, let's get out of here.
Well, he's like, I should have been out by now. Now I'm actually leaving.
He's like, okay, let's get the fuck out of here.
Right.
So him and Jock Morton escaped their cabin in the middle of the night and dug out under a fence and took off. They stole a car in Pennsylvania. And for the next 4 days, they drove into small towns and burglarized homes and corner stores. Sometimes only taking like a dollar. I mean, just the worst criminals.
So, I mean, they're kids.
They're doing a very bad job. They didn't make any money doing this.
Well, no, because they're 14.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know what I was doing at 14.
But Jock was a little older.
But not that.
But still. So they can hotwire a car, but they can't figure out how to steal a good chunk of money and get out of here. They're just driving around Pennsylvania.
They're just like, la, 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 dollar here, dollar there, right. Blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So at the end of the 4 days, they had committed 30 burglaries.
And had like $30.
You're going to laugh at how many dollars they didn't have. Because they didn't have much to show for all the nonsense, because when they were finally caught drunk and in a crashed, stolen car, they only had $4 between the two of them.
After 30 burglaries.
Yes.
I mean, they must have spent some of it, obviously.
They spent it on beer, they said. But beer wasn't even that expensive.
And gas, maybe?
Yeah.
But
$4? That's wow, all you got dudes. To show for all that?
I thought they were just going to say we're going to have 30.
No.
Okay.
So
he's kind of a failure at that, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this also sucks because Jock had been taken to adult jail.
Oh, so he was older.
He was older.
He was 18?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, so maybe he was like younger in the reform school, but then he... Well, I don't understand that. Unless he was like 17 or something.
So, yeah, a lot of times, and I know now they do it too, like 18 to 24-year-olds, if you go into the system when you're that young,
Oh. They
don't usually put you in regular adult prison.
That's true. Like, because he could be in a youth authority.
Whole different ballgame.
Or something. Okay.
Yeah. Which I'll go over also.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really turn out well for him at all.
Oh.
So Jock went to adult jail because of his age, and Carl was returned to the reform school. Carl ended up doing 60 days in solitary confinement for his escape.
They had solitary confinement for children.
Yes.
That's great. That sounds like something that would really help rehabilitate them. Yes. And make sure they wouldn't do that shit again.
So all of these traumas are stacking up.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I hope that everyone knows I was being sarcastic.
Yes. After serving his punishment, 60 days in solitary, he was placed with a new foster family, the Romanskys.
The Romanskys?
Yes.
Okay, they might be shitty, I don't know, but that's a really, really good name.
They were a wealthy couple with three boys. The way he talks about them is like, they look down on him. Oh. Like, they're like, aren't we so nice for taking you in, you little scum piece of trash?
Like, we're the Romanskys, Yeah. And you are not a Romansky.
We're
but
so good that we're going to lower ourselves to take in a scum like you.
We're doing a good deed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and he also heard the boys, the sons talking about him.
Oh, like how he was so much lower than them.
Yeah. And how they didn't want him there. And like on his first night, he had just gotten there.
You're like, why did you sign up to be foster parents?
Why did you
again?
Bring me here? You should have just left me alone.
Right.
Just leave me in the reform school. So the reason why they placed him in that foster home is it was close to his real mother and his sister, Ruth.
They found Mama?
They found Mom. So he was able to visit them. He hadn't seen her since he was 10 years old. He's now roughly 17. So.
Oh, geez.
He visited them. Carl tried to convince his mother to take him back to let him live with her again, to which she refused. She didn't want him back. She made that very clear. She didn't want any of her kids back.
Then why are they even visiting?
I don't know.
This is just odd.
Because she accepted the visit.
So she didn't lose parental rights if they're letting him visit her. I guess not. The 60s were wild, man, because
well, and he was visiting by himself. He wasn't visiting with his foster family or a caseworker or anything.
Okay, but I thought he was placed there because she was close.
Yeah, I mean, that was their intention.
So then, yeah.
They did it on purpose.
They were definitely, you know, encouraging this.
Yeah.
What the hell?
And she was like a waitress. And she's like, no, I just want to work my waitressing job and like go out to the bar with my friends. Like, I don't want anything to do with my kids.
I just birth them. I don't raise them.
Clearly. So, after that conversation, Carl was headed back to the Romansky's house. I think they were like 3 miles away, so he was walking.
Wow.
And on his way back, he decided, you know what? It's not going to work out with this family either. These kids don't like me.
No.
These people are assholes. They think I'm a piece of shit. I'm just going to leave.
Yeah, that's what I'll just run away
again. Yeah. So he went to a parking lot and tried to hotwire a car.
Oh.
But there was a security guard that had been watching him since he hit the parking lot.
Because he's like, well, that kid looks sketch.
Yeah. And while he was trying to hotwire the car, he was dragged out of the car by his feet and handcuffed.
Oh, no.
So he was then sent to Madison Boys Home. Madison Boys Home was different than the first reform school because he was older and he was also, like, indignant. He wasn't following the program.
Right.
So that was for, like, more troubled kids. So at the Madison Boys Home, there was a worker there who they called, like, the old man, but his name was Ray. And Ray offered to get Carl out of the boys' home in exchange for sexual favors.
Ew.
Yeah. The deal was Ray had an apartment in Baltimore and Carl could escape the boys' home in Ray's trunk. So he'd get in his trunk and then drive him home after work and live at the Baltimore apartment as long as he agreed to treat him nice while he was home.
Of course, because he's a pedophile.
Yes. And also, interestingly, never made the boys do anything, just wanted to do it to them.
Still a pedophile.
Still a pedophile.
Yeah.
Somehow they justified that to themselves. Well, the other boys that were already there.
When you're being abused, you justify a lot to yourself.
And also you're living the free life. He's buying groceries. He's paying the bills. You get to live at this house, party with people.
Oh, jeez.
So I guess that's the sacrifice they're making. Anyway. There are already two boys living at Ray's house that had taken the same deal.
Mm-hmm.
And about 4 months after being at the boys' home, Carl took him up on his offer and moved in with Ray. He worked him. I mean, he basically groomed him to do it. Like, because initially Carl said no. Like, get fucked. Get away from
me.
Oh, he
definitely groomed him for sure.
He's like, I don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah.
And then he's like,
yeah, 4 months later, he had some time to work on
him.
Are
you sure you don't want your freedom?
Yeah.
So I can get you out of here.
Yeah.
So he took him up on it. And while living with Ray, Ray would have these parties. And he would say that the boys were his nephews. Like, okay. He would tell people, these are my nephews. Everybody kind of knew what was going on. And everyone knew that they were, like, troubled youths.
Like, open secret kind of thing.
Yes. But, like, the scene that Ray partied in, I guess, he would have, like, parties at his house. And the nephews would be, like, the waiters or whatever. They would, like, stand around and be good looking, and people would like they were models at the party or something.
Okay.
Weird.
Well, did they have to do things to people or no?
No.
Oh, okay. They were just there to be looked at?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were like just objects.
Right.
Yeah. So while he was living with Ray at a party, he met a criminal named Keen. K-E-E-N. Carl began working with Keen on his burglaries.
Dude, we should have named our cocktail Peachy Keen. Peachy. What the fuck?
He's a pretty small part of the story.
But still, man. I don't know.
So Keene was what they called a stick-up man.
Okay.
I think which I guess is an armed burglar.
Yeah.
Armed robber?
Armed robber.
Stick-up.
Stick-em-up.
So Carl began working with Keene on his burglaries, which is when Carl really learned to run. I mean, like, he was a pro.
Oh, you mean, like, physically he learned how to run?
No, evading the law.
Oh, right. I see. Because he's a peach evasion.
Yes, peach evasion. Keene knew all the tricks about not getting caught, and their little crime spree lasted for about 9 months. They did 39 armed robberies in 4 states.
Wow.
This time, when Carl was caught, he was an adult, and so he was sent to Maryland State Prison.
Okay.
This part is sad.
Oh, no. I don't like sad things, April.
Well, I also don't like Carl.
Okay.
So.
Well, and we're leaving childhood now, so now I have to stop feeling bad for him.
He's an adult. You will still feel bad for him in this part, but.
Okay.
Shortly after arriving at Maryland State Prison, a riot broke out. He had been, because he's a white inmate, there are gangs and race gangs in prison.
Right.
Especially in the 70s. You follow where you're supposed to go.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you get dealt with.
Yeah.
Right. So he had been sort of like picked on. And he's a child still, sort of. He's barely 18 years old.
Wow.
He's been in boys' schools, but this is nothing compared to
real
adult prison.
Hard time.
Yeah. So a riot broke out, and some of the convicts took over the housing unit that he was in. And a group of 5 prisoners, there were black prisoners, because they were, he was not being protected by the white gangs.
Oh, because he wasn't in the white gang.
Right.
Okay.
It gave them the opportunity to violently rape and brutalize Carl for literally hours. So this was basically the end of the line for Carl. Like, he was brutalized to the point of no return, and there was no way he was going to live a normal life after that.
I literally feel nauseous.
Yeah, they said it was like 8 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So, after everyone found out what happened, 10 days later, he was transferred to the Maryland Correctional Camp. And then about a month later, he was transferred again to the minimum security Poplar Hill Institution. This is where Carl met up with his older half-brother, Wayne Coleman.
So now they're both in prison together?
Wayne's in jail, too.
What's Wayne been up to?
Nothing good. So Wayne was 26 by then and had been in and out of jail and other institutions for car theft and burglary.
Fucking Betty. I'm blaming her for this. No, actually, I'm blaming Dad. What was Ed? Oh, no. What was Dad's name?
Dad was Archie.
Okay, Archie.
But actually, Archie was not Wayne's dad.
Nobody left all the kids.
It was Carson Coleman.
Oh, okay.
I blame
Carson.
Betty.
I just blame everyone.
Fuck.
I blame everyone who failed all these kids.
They failed all these kids.
Yeah.
So, I mean, birds of a feather.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and especially since they're like doing the same shit, car theft and burglary.
It was like the family business now.
Unbeknownst to them.
Unbeknownst
to
each
They weren't in
other.
Like contact with
That's
each other.
That's true. Wow.
They weren't like calling each other like, hey, are you.
So what, they just showed
what's
to
your
prison
new hot wire
like,
thing?
Yo, you look familiar.
They're like, hey, it's my brother. That's... He remembered his brother.
Yeah.
And he's only, let's see, 7 years older than him.
No, that's true, because he was 18 or 19 now.
Yeah. So Wayne was kind of shy and often like a follower. He wasn't like a outgoing guy, really.
Yeah.
So it didn't take much effort for Carl to convince Wayne they're going to escape.
Oh, so Carl's
the ringleader.
The ringleader in this case.
So they're like, he's like, let's get the fuck out of here, man.
Minimum security, baby.
Yeah, I finally got my brother. Can go on the run and find something better to do than be here, right?
Right.
So Wayne agreed, as long as he could take his friend with him, who's George Dungy. George was 36 years old. He was at Poplar Hill for failing to pay child support, which I didn't know you could go to prison for.
Never knew that either, because people get away with that shit all the time.
I guess you can. And while they were at Poplar, George and Wayne were in a relationship.
George and Wayne. Got it.
Like a more than friends relationship.
Right.
Which is probably the only reason George agreed to escape with them. George probably wouldn't have gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no. He was quite a bit older than them.
Yeah.
He was 36. Wayne was 26. So, I mean, if they hadn't have been boyfriends, probably not.
But he loved him some Wayne.
I guess.
Yeah.
And he was not like, I mean, I don't think he was like stupid, but I don't think he was like all firing on all cylinders. Okay. Maybe.
Yeah.
He was gullible.
Okay.
I'll say that.
Yeah.
So on May 5th, 1973, the three men, Carl, Wayne, George, climbed through a bathroom window and ran into the woods.
It's that easy, huh?
I guess so. That's minimum security, right? If I've ever heard it.
Jeez.
Not even a gate. They eventually made it to Baltimore, where they stole a blue Thunderbird. Because the men didn't have a criminal history of causing danger to the public, the authorities weren't alerted of their escape right away. I don't necessarily agree with that. Carl committed armed robberies, and they were stealing cars.
But they hadn't, like, physically hurt anyone before, so that's what they're saying, thinking to themselves.
I guess so.
Okay.
So they're like, run. Whatever. Good luck. They're not, like, sending out helicopters. It's not, like, a thing.
Well, minimum security.
They're like, whatever, let them go. We'll catch them again.
Yeah.
They'll get pulled over.
We don't have the resources.
They'll get caught on a warrant. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they stayed in Baltimore for a couple days and picked up Billy, who is William, Carl's 15-year-old brother.
15?
It's a baby. He was the baby in the beginning.
That's right.
Billy was more than happy to follow along because he idolized his big brother, Carl. Well,
of course he did.
Yeah. So these four spent about a week driving around Maryland and Pennsylvania doing a bunch of B&Es.
Okay.
They're just breaking. They're entering. They're burglarizing. They're taking shit.
Well, they have literally no plan. They're just, I mean.
They do have a plan.
Oh, what's their plan?
I'll get to the plan.
Okay.
So during their breaking and entering, they got cash, clothes, and guns. You know, the stuff you're looking for in someone else's house.
Of course.
The plan was, at least Carl's plan, was after they got all the stuff they needed, they were going to head south to Florida or Mexico to live the good life.
Okay.
Drinking, drugs, and crime in the sunshine. Doesn't that sound nice?
Drinking, drugs, and crime in the sunshine.
I like how he picked Florida or Mexico. Like, you should have picked Mexico. Florida is still in the United States.
Also, they're very, like, yeah.
They're very far apart.
They're very far apart.
Should have picked Mexico. If you'd hit the Mexico line and just kept going,
you probably would have been
fine. You would have never probably been caught.
Yeah.
Yeah. So by May 10th, so they escaped on May 5th. By May 10th, they were in Pennsylvania stealing a dark green 1968 Chevy Supersport.
And we're in the 70s now.
Yes.
Okay.
1973.
Oh, yeah.
By May 14th, they arrive in Donelson, Georgia.
Oh, no.
So first, they drove past Donelson, Georgia to Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh.
Then they decided to turn around and come back for, I don't know.
Because they're dumbasses.
Because they're kids. I mean, they're not all kids, but Carl's a kid. He's never been out and done anything.
Carl is technically an adult now.
He's been in these reform schools and prison, and he doesn't know what the hell's going on.
And you got a 26-year-old and a 36-year-old with a 15-year-old and an 19-year-old.
Idiots.
This is just all going to be very bad.
Yeah, it's going to go bad. So this is my time.
She's wiggling her fingers around her head.
It's like to take you to another time. Yeah.
Okay.
So Monday, May 14th, 1973, started out like any other day for the Allday family. Ernestine was cooking in the kitchen, doing chores around the house. The Allday men came to the big farmhouse for lunch around noon and finished their lunch around 1 p.m. They spent their lunch chatting about their plans for work for the rest of the day. Ned, the dad, and Jerry, one of the boys, well, one of the sons, I won't say boys, were plowing a half-muddy field, and Jimmy planned to plow, one of his other sons, planned to plow the field behind Jerry's trailer. Shuggy and his Uncle Aubrey were working on borrowed equipment to plow a field on the west side of the property. The Alday men left the farmhouse and went back to work, leaving Ernestine behind in the house. So right around this time, Carl, Wayne, George, and Billy were driving through Seminole County, and they were out of gas. Sorry, they were out of money and about to be out of gas. We're not out of gas yet.
But you can't get gas when you don't have money.
Right. And they spent most of their money on beer.
Again.
Like children do. These are, they're not good criminals.
They're not. And they're not children except one.
I know. They were looking for a place to rob or at least siphon some gas. They're like, we just need to keep going. They stopped at a gas tank in the middle of a field, but it was diesel. So they continued looking. About 15 minutes later, they came upon River Road. The trailer they found belonged to Jerry and Mary Alday, and there was a gas pump on their property.
Jerry and Mary.
I know. The men did their usual B&E routine. We're going in. We're going to ransack the place. We're going to steal some gas and get out of here. So Carl and Wayne entered the trailer to see what they could steal, while George and Billy stayed in the car as lookouts. So this is where things go bad. And they go bad really fast and in a really fucking insane way. Like, not what I was expecting. So Jerry and Ned, his dad, pull up to the trailer in their Jeep.
And see these yahoos out there.
They didn't see anything.
Oh.
Because they were parked behind the trailer.
Oh, so they saw nothing.
Where the gas tank was. They saw nothing.
Okay.
Billy called out to Carl to warn him. So Billy's in the car. He calls out to his brother. Hey.
I see folk arriving.
There's people. But Jerry and Ned didn't know the house was being ransacked. So they walk in the front door. And they were met with Carl pointing a gun in their face. Ordering them to sit at the kitchen table and empty their pockets. So, okay, they're being robbed.
Okay.
All they had was a lighter, a wallet, and some change. These are like, they're country, rural people that work on a farm. They're not carrying around,
and also,
like,
they were out working.
Yeah, they're not wearing like Rolexes.
They're not carrying cash on them. They're out working their farm.
Exactly.
Dumbasses.
Once their pockets were emptied, Jerry and Ned were taken to two separate bedrooms. Carl shot and killed Jerry Alday, 35, and Wayne shot Ned, age 66.
So now they have completely graduated to murder.
Very quickly.
Very quickly, yeah.
Ned was not killed on the first shot, and Carl assisted Wayne. Later, autopsies showed that Ned had been shot six times with a 22 caliber and a 32 caliber, and Jerry had been shot four times with a 22 caliber pistol. Only a short time later, because what I found out kind of at the end of this is that this is where they were all meeting after their day was over to talk about tomorrow.
No.
This is where everybody came to sit at their kitchen table, decide what was going to be going on for the next day. The next day is Tuesday, so it's a regular work day. Everyone shows up at about the same time.
So if they just picked a different trailer to go to, but how would you know? I'm just saying, like,
it totally unlucky.
It was completely unlucky.
Yeah. Completely unlucky that it was not noon or 2 o'clock when they were still out in the fields plowing and no one was home. Also, graduated to murder so quickly when you don't even know if these people are even going to say anything. You could just be like, give me all your shit. And they're like, okay, yeah, take some gas and go.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder why they didn't decided say, to kill them.
They didn't say, I'm calling the cops. They didn't say they didn't have weapons with them. Like, why?
Why?
So only a short time later, Jimmy Alday, Ned's other son, drove up to the trailer on a John Deere tractor. He knocked on the door, not knowing what had happened to his father and brother. And he was met with a pistol to the face held by Wayne. He was robbed of his hat, sunglasses, and empty wallet. Carl then directed Jimmy to the living room to lie face down on the couch, and Carl shot Jimmy, age 25, twice in the back of the head.
Carl is so broken.
Yeah. Very broken. That's a perfect word.
He is.
For what he's is.
Absolutely broken.
Carl then went outside the trailer to move the tractor because it was parked in front of their car. So I'm guessing at this point they're getting ready to split, get the gas and leave. But he had to move the tractor. And Jerry's wife, Mary, arrived home with groceries.
No.
At the same time. Carl shoved the pistol in her face and ordered her into the trailer. She was then robbed of her watch and her wallet with $1. Then Shuggy and Aubrey Alday arrived in a truck. They also had no idea what was going on because everything's inside the
trailer.
They're
all just driving to the... I have no words.
Yeah, one after the other. And Shuggy and Aubrey were chatting and laughing in the truck, having no idea what's going on.
Right.
Apparently, Carl didn't want to wait for them to come inside, so he decided to go greet Shuggy and Aubrey at the truck. And actually, Billy was on the other side of the truck, his 15-year-old brother. They both opened the doors at the same time so that they didn't have a chance to do something.
Right.
he ordered the men out of the truck and into the trailer. They were forced to the floor on the kitchen. Sorry. They were forced to the floor in the kitchen with Mary, where Mary was sitting. George then took Mary to the bathroom and locked her in the bathroom, or like stood guard, whatever. Wayne then took Shuggy, who was 30, to the bedroom where Ned was killed. Shuggy was shot once and killed. Carl took Aubrey, who's 57, to the bedroom where Jerry had been killed. And Aubrey was shot once and killed.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mary was then taken from the bathroom to the kitchen table where she was raped by Carl and Wayne.
No, no. God damn it, I knew that was coming.
I know.
God.
She was then blindfolded and gagged and driven to the woods. She was dragged out of the car by her hair, raped by George and Carl. So now all of a sudden George is involved.
Fuck off.
Pictures were taken of her with a camera stolen from the trailer.
What? Oh my God.
Blindfolded and gagged.
Jesus.
After all that, George made her lie face down and then shot her one time near the back of the head.
Great.
Yeah. The men headed back to the trailer, stole Mary's blue and white Chevy Impala, and they were on the run. Once again, they were headed towards Alabama.
Pieces of absolute trash.
That's the end of part one.
What the You're leaving me there? You're leaving me hanging.
Sorry.
On that note, oh man, that was rough, dude.
It turned south so quickly.
It really did. I wasn't, yeah, I almost wouldn't expect that. And you're right, I'm sorry for the child, Carl, but fuck you, Carl. That is not, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it is horrific, some of the things that happened to him.
It is.
But people have horrific things happen to them all the time, and they don't commit that kind of crime. So
very true. And also, like, obviously he's 19 when this is happening. I'll post some of the arrest pictures. He looks like he looks like a baby.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see the pictures. I want to know what this guy looks like, but
I can pull him up for you.
Yeah. I mean, that was so good, April. I can't wait for number two. I can't wait for part two.
Look at this boy.
Oh, he's a baby.
He's a baby.
He does look like a baby. And he doesn't look like someone you'd be scared of.
No.
Like if you saw him walking down the street, you'd be like, oh, there's a guy.
There's a nice kid.
There's a nice kid. Yeah, that means you got to watch out for everyone.
Yeah, to go from that to, and how everybody just seamlessly joined in. They didn't have this as a plan. They didn't go up there like, if anybody comes home, we're going to take him in the bedrooms and shoot him in the head. Like, they just, well, one Carl, after the other, Carl just leading the show.
I was going to say, he's definitely the leader here. Mm-hmm. He's the one with, you know, all of the, what's the word?
It's like the mastermind.
Yeah. All the influence is the word I'm trying to think of. Yes. He's definitely the one with all the influence.
Yeah. So this story makes me really tired.
Thanks a lot, April.
I'm worn out.
All right, but I can't wait for part two because now I want to know what's going to happen to those pieces of absolute trash.
Well, I mean, you see that he's arrested.
Okay.
They don't get away with
Spoiler
it.
Spoiler alert.
They don't get away with it.
Well, that's good to know.
And nothing happened to Ernestine.
Oh, yeah, Ernestine.
She was still in the farmhouse, even though her whole family got slaughtered.
Yeah, I can't.
It's fucking horrible.
I can't.
And that poor town.
That tiny little town.
Of 3,000 people where nothing ever happens. I mean, they said people went from not locking their doors to having 3 locks on their doors.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, the wounds that last for so long after something like that happens.
Yeah.
It changes so many lives beyond just the people involved.
Absolutely. Well, do you want to tell people where to find us? They'll have to wait for part 2. You can find us on Instagram.
Yeah.
We are at Killer Spirits Pod. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. You can email us.
You can email us at killerspiritspod@gmail.com. Wow, look at me going. I'm not even reading anything. Come on.
Yeah, next.
Actually, I don't know anything else.
We're on Patreon. Patreon.com/killerspiritspod. We put all of our drink videos up there. So if you would like to become a Patreon.
Yeah, all behind the scenes. And we have the recipes. Oh, and we're like kind of drafting a recipe book.
I'm literally drafting a recipe book.
It's not kind of, it's literally.
Yeah, I'm doing it. That'll be ready on the 50th episode.
Yeah, 50th.
I'm going to let it
marinate.
Let it run until then.
Yeah.
We'll have some volumes. And if we keep ending up with these 2-part episodes.
Oh, yeah, because
we're going to get there in no time.
Yeah. You're right. We will.
We still haven't had to do a 3-parter.
No, I almost did once, but then I just got so tired of that bullshit that I was done with
it. You're like, I'm done fucking talking about
this. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it was the chicken coop murders.
Oh.
And I was like, you know, I just can't live here anymore.
Yeah, that was a sick one.
I'm ready to leave. So.
I feel like physically exhausted from this one.
Yeah.
I know that you get like that too.
I do.
Like I feel drained.
Yeah. But you know what? I had never heard this story. It's a good one. So I want to hear part 2. Can't wait.
And the only reason I found it is because we wanted to use that peach vodka. I just looked up Georgia murders.
Oh, wow. Well, you know what? Since the most lucrative fruit is the blueberry, we might do something blueberry next week. Not sure yet.
We do have Stoli blueberry.
There you go.
We have blueberry vodka. Blueberry vodka.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Bye.